Health Resources Committee to order on this 21st day of March. We have several items for business today, and we'll begin with House Joint Resolution 85, supporting the UN Conference on Environment and Development. Then we'll proceed to Senate Bill 375. Then we'll go on to House Bill 429, Legislative Management of Game Resources by Representative Sharp. Then we'll go on to House Bill 478. Probably before we get to these latter two, we will stop at 4 o'clock and take up the confirmation hearings of the Board of Fish and the Board of Game, as well as the Big Game Legal Services Board. I want to make sure that everybody in teleconferences is ready at 4 o'clock, so we'll go there at 4 o'clock, regardless of where we are in the agenda. And then finally, Senate to Concurrent Resolution Number 8. And we'll begin then with House Joint Resolution 85. And we have a couple of amendments. It's not the intention of the chairman to move any of these bills out today. A couple of them are first time heard in the process, and others will be awaiting technical or otherwise additions or work to be done on them. So with that, I'd like to start with House Joint Resolution 85, and would ask the Resources Committee is the sponsor. I would like to ask Jeff Butler from Senate to show us off to give us testimony.
We're not on teleconference for this?
Yes, we are, for everything.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the House Resources Committee. And thank you for introducing House Joint Resolution 85. My name is Jeff Butler. I'm a legislative aide intern for Senator Pat Porcheau, and I'll be traveling to the non-government sector of the United Nations Conference on Environment and Development as part of a small Alaskan delegation. The Earth Summit, I would like to give this testimony in support of House Joint Resolution 85, which endorses the goals and objectives of the United Nations Conference on Environment and Development and urges President Bush to attend the conference. The Earth Summit is the largest and most comprehensive conference on environment and development issues in the world's history and will be attended by most nations in the world, including the economic powers of Japan and the European community. In all, as many as 160 nation states will be represented. This conference has the purpose of crafting strategies that would prevent further global environmental degradation and foster sustainable economic development. These strategies will be designed to help reshape the world's economy and revitalize economic development on an environmentally sound and sustainable basis. HJR 85 endorses the goals and objectives of the United Nations Conference and calls on President Bush to take a leadership role by personally attending this conference. Since the United States is the foremost economic, political, and military power currently, it follows that active participation and leadership is called for on the part of President Bush, both to initiate cooperative efforts towards sustainable environment and development relationships, and to become aware of current initiatives by other world powers with whom we share the international political arena. Alaska's endorsement of this conference through HJR 85 will help send a message to Washington promoting leadership responsibility in developing solutions to the increasing range of global environmental problems which affect all nations in all areas of the globe. Currently, similar resolutions as HJR 85 have passed the Oklahoma Senate, both houses in the Massachusetts legislature, and the Illinois House of Representatives. Some 20 states in all have similar resolutions moving through their legislatures. I would like to also thank Representative Grunberg's office for their help in with this resolution. And before closing and opening for questions, I would like to recommend adopting the amendment in the bill packets. This amendment was suggested by DEC. They couldn't be here to introduce it. It pertains to an international agreement that was signed in 1981, which deals with the Arctic environment. And with that, I'd like to close, and I'd like to answer any questions that members may have.
Are there committee questions or comments? Representative Lima?
Chairman and Jeff, one of the challenges that I have with a resolution like this, and similar to some of the comments I shared when you weren't here working with the legislature about 3 years ago, and you take an idea that I think there's a lot of merit in some of the things in here, but then it goes beyond the merit and it starts encroaching in almost pseudo-engineering. This is a profession where I do a lot of work. And then when I see statements like the Alaska legislature recognizes problems such as global climate change, ozone depletion, some of our best scientific experiments are at worst non-conclusive when it comes to these things as to whether there is even global climate change that is, you know, other than what's naturally occurring, and the same with ozone depletion. So when we go on record as saying that this is a problem, or recognizes the problem, and we're sort of going beyond what even some of the best scientists in NOAA and NASA are determining. And I'm wondering if, you know, if we have some corner on the market of intelligence that maybe these other scientific agencies don't have, or are we stepping sort of beyond where we should? Or maybe we should go back and just state that we know, and, you know, and try to stay away from those things that go beyond that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lehman, there is wide debate as far as the extent of the problems, but there is quite a bit of conclusive evidence that does show that there are some major changes, especially in the areas of ozone depletion. Most nation states in the world are in agreement that the scientific data is sound, that the ozone layer is in fact diminishing, especially in the southern hemisphere. Right now, the Australian government issues public alerts during times when there's excessive ultraviolet radiation. They have a public service program where they're encouraging people to wear heavy doses of sunblock and such. There was a joint statement by the National Science Fund, or rather the National Academy of Sciences in this country, and the British Royal Society of London, which is a scientific group in England, and they issued a statement declaring that irreversible damage to the Earth's capacity to sustain life may ensue without widespread behavioral changes and curbs on population growth. These are two of the foremost national scientific bodies that we have. The question of climate change, in fact, is still in question, rather, whether it's a natural system or whether it is being, whether it's resulting from humankind's activities. Nonetheless, waiting too much further to act on some of these problems, especially with the ozone depletion, is questionable as far as how responsible that is. This resolution simply urges support. It doesn't commit Alaska to anything. I understand that more research needs to be done, but perhaps attending such a conference as this would allow President Bush and the United States to network and further the research in those areas.
Thank you, Jeff. Are there other questions or comments, Representative Lincoln?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if it is in order to make a motion to adopt the CS, I'm prepared to do that.
Yes, I would note let me first indicate who's present before we adopt that. Present today for the committee is Representative Hudson, Representative Lehman, Vice Chairman Lincoln, Representative Zwacky, and Representative Carney, and Chairman Davidson. We have before us committee substitute House Joint Resolution Number 85, Resources, and I would accept the motion to adopt the committee substitute. Representative Lincoln.
That is my motion, Mr. Chairman, to adopt the CS for HJR 85 Resources.
Before I ask for unanimous consent, or ask if you ask for unanimous consent, I would indicate that lines 12 through 14 on page 1 were added at the request of Vice Chairman Lincoln. And did you ask unanimous consent?
I do.
Is there objection? Without objection, then we do have before us Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution 85 Resources. Representative Lee.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to belabor this, and maybe I can work with the committee staff on some of the wording just to make a few what I call technical modifications. So, but I just do want to note, Jeff, that such natural events such as the volcano erupting in the Philippines has shown to have far more significant impact on things like ozone, potential ozone depletion than some of our man-caused things. And that's not to suggest that we shouldn't still make the effort, because I think we should. But and I think probably much of the purposes of the conference are sound. But my point is that sometimes we take some things and we take evidences such as those from naturally occurring phenomena, and then we translate them into and suggest maybe that they're man-caused. And I just want to make sure that we're stating the facts whenever we're doing a statement from the legislature. And that's just my comment. I'd be happy to work with your staff maybe to make a few more remarks.
Representative Lehman, perhaps if you could point out where we overstepped the bound there that truly concerns you. Is there some language that, or any place in the resolution that you particularly would like to have problems with?
Well, like on line 4, we say evidence mounts of the long-term damage being done to the earth by global climate change. Well, the evidence I've seen, it isn't clear that, of that damage. I don't know that it's mounting that we have that damage. I think there are suggestions that some of that's happening, and that a lot of this could be cyclical, and then just when that happens so long, we go into some cold spells. And so, and then the scientists go back and say, well, maybe we better look at another theory. And so I'm just suggesting there's language like that, and down in lines 15 and 16, where we state the problem before we're absolutely sure that there is such a problem. I think, in theory, that things like global climate change and ozone depletion may have a significance on the impact on our environment. But so far, I'm not convinced that, in terms of a global event, that it's really a problem yet. And those are a couple of things, Mr. Chairman, that I would just point out there.
Thank you.
Maybe need some fine-tuning.
Ms. Butler.
In response, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lehman, I could provide for the committee some materials that do point to some conclusive understandings or beliefs on the part of the scientific community, if that would be wanted. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Butler, next I'd like to go on into public testimony. Representative Hudson. Vice Chairman Lincoln.
Well, Representative Hudson, I see you holding a piece of paper, and that might be the same thing that I'm going to do, so I'll yield to you.
Well, before, actually, I've done this out of order because there is one person who wishes to testify, one person who wishes to testify yet remaining. So I should have done that before we adopt the committee substitute. So let's go to him first, and we'll come back for the adoption of the minutes.
Mr. Chairman, as long as the person that's testifying also recognizes that there are several other, or one amendment to be offered, and maybe would address some of the concerns.
Mr. McCutcheon in Anchorage, are you there? Jerry McCutcheon?
The record, my name is Jerry McCutcheon. This will be rather brief. Some people wouldn't know the facts if they fell over it. Some people wouldn't know it till it's far too late. Maybe what you really need to do, pass a resolution where we select a mountain of durable rock, put a large face on it like Hoagland's Mars, so let people know we were once here, but we couldn't learn from the past. Now I'd like to propose an amendment. Whereas President George Bush has the National Guard under the direction of the Corps of Engineers building bridges for Campesinos in Costa Rica, whereas President George Bush has bridge building to the furtherance of logging of Costa Rica rainforests, whereas the National Guard members are disgusted and disappointed and want to come home, we're being forced to construct bridges for the further destruction of the rainforests of Costa Rica. Further be it resolved that the Alaska State Legislature calls upon the President of the United States to cease and desist from furtherance destruction of the Costa Rica rainforest by building bridges for the logging companies. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Cutchin. With that, the chairman would entertain the motion to move the amendments offered by DEC. Representative Hudson.
Mr. Chairman, since we have adopted the committee substitute resources, is it your understanding that these amendments are to be accepted at this hearing?
Yes, I would entertain such a motion.
I Representative Mr. Chairman, and I would move the amendments before each one of us. Page 1, line 14, inserting the two clauses that we're having here. And for those that are on teleconference, I presume that they can get a copy at the center, huh?
Well, why don't you just quickly read through them. Mm-hmm.
All right. For those that may not have it before them, this amendment is on page 1, line 14, and it inserts two whereas clauses. The first, whereas the Alaska State Legislature endorses the goals and objectives of the multinational agreement establish an Arctic Environmental Protection Strategy, which has been signed by the 8 northern countries of the United States, Soviet Union, Canada, Denmark, Finland, Norway, Sweden, and Iceland on June 14, 1991. And following that, another whereas, the Alaska State Legislature supports the cooperative efforts between the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation on bilateral environmental agreement with the two nations which border Alaska, Russia, and Canada. Those are the two whereases that would be inserted. It's my understanding that they are being offered by the Department of Alaska Environmental Conservation. Is that correct?
That is correct, Representative Hudson.
I would offer this amendment, sir.
And ask unanimous consent?
And ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Without objection, then we have adopted the two amendments offered by the Department of Environmental Conservation, and that concludes our efforts today on House Joint Resolution 85. We will take up this resolution tomorrow with the intention of passing it out. And that brings us next down to Senate Bill 375, and we have the sponsor, the staff person here. Good afternoon, Mr. Heron, and welcome to the House Resources Committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Are we on teleconference?
We are, sir.
For the record, my name is Bob Heron, staff to Senator Hoffman. Senator Hoffman introduced Senate Bill 375 based upon a legislative audit that is included in your packet. And in that audit, Commissioner Sundberg is quoted as saying that I am convinced that there is a conflict of interest exists between guiding and enforcement. And the most harmful conflict is that the public perception that guiding and enforcement could be doing things that would harm the public good. It is it has been the department's policy, both in public safety and fish and game, that they do not allow this, but it's not always been enforced. So the senator has introduced this legislation to put this in statute so that there is no winking or allowance of a conflict to arise. I'm available for questions if there are any.
Are there questions by members of the committee? Mr. Heron, those who enforce the laws, does that not also include most people who work for fish and game?
It's my understanding, Mr. Chairman, that the biologists can be deputized for this.
So does that mean then that these people should be the ones that are deputized, or should it be some other provision in event if these people are in a position to be able to be deputized, what is the feeling of the sponsor as regards this legislation as it affects those people?
The senator would not oppose any amendment that would take care of that.
For the record, we have been joined by Representative Moyer earlier in the meeting. Are there other questions by members of the committee? Representative Lincoln?
Thank you. On the memo from Senator Hoffman, it noted that there were two technical amendments that were made by the Senate Resources Committee. Could you tell us what those two amendments were?
The resources, the technical amendments, where that it was on, I believe it's on page two, line one, a person whose license is subject to suspension under the subsection shall notify. In other words, in the state affairs, Senate state affairs, the department didn't want to be in the position to have to contact these people, so they turned it around. And the other one, I believe, was just basically a technical, just a correction in grammar.
Thank you.
Additional questions by members of the committee? Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I presume this letter in the packet from the Office of the Commissioner of Public Safety indicates their support for this legislation.
Representative Hudson, in all committees, the department did not oppose the bill.
Yes, I have received word here that the Department of Public Safety does not oppose the bill, but they couldn't be here today. So, additional questions by members of the committee? No additional questions. Mr. Herron, we have a standing rule in this committee. We don't turn bills out on the first day that we hear them. And we will try to get to this bill tomorrow. It's my understanding there are other concerns with the bill, and there are other people here to testify, so we'll continue with that testimony. Did you have any further remarks, sir?
No, sir. Thanks.
Thanks, Bob. With that, I'd like to call on Duncan Pollard.
Chairman, for the record, my name is Duncan Fowler. I'm the ombudsman for the state. My interest in this bill, and I do support this bill, came as a result of several investigations my office has done regarding the same issue of public safety employees also acting as guides, either for compensation or for no compensation. And in fact, a summary of our investigative report happens to be included in Senator Hoffman's packet. You had suggested a little bit earlier, or mentioned a little bit earlier, that there were some concerns about fish and game employees also maybe needing to be covered by this. And this is a concern of mine, and it's something that frankly happened, came up, and was, I started to think about since the House State Affairs Committee meeting. Alaska Statute 1605-150 gives the Commissioner of Public Safety the ability to be able to appoint individuals either within his department or other people and make them peace officers for the purposes of enforcing fish and game laws. I talked to Commissioner Roser and told him that I thought it would be a good idea that his people who were appointed or given this authority also be included under this statute. He did not object to having this be included. I don't have a clear amendment for you, but I would suggest that it may be of worth to have the committee put in amending language into Senate Bill 375 that would also include those persons who are given law enforcement authority under 1605-150 sections 1 and section 3. The reason I say sections 1 and sections 3 is because clearly we have police officers by municipalities and other people out there that the state has no control over, and I don't think it's appropriate for for them to be brought under this statute. But what we are talking about here is clearly people who the Commissioner of Fish and Game has authority over and people who the Commissioner of Fish and Game appoints, essentially saying that these people may not also be commercial guides during the period that the commission is in force. I think that would frankly take care of the last loophole on this, and our investigations have shown that people have played all the loopholes in this, and it's been very disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Questions, Mr. Fowler? So what we need to do is we need to come up with some conceptual language, or we will hold the bill over until tomorrow if we can get to it. Tomorrow, we have a busy day tomorrow. Could you get with staff, Duncan, so we could come up with some possible language along with the drafter to address the issue that you see here?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do that. In fact, I could meet with the drafter and explain this, and I'm sure it would be easy to merge into the bill. It's just not something I think would be easy to do during the committee meeting. Mm-hmm.
So, without further questions or comments, I don't believe I have any more. Thank you very much. So we will await conceptual language amendment to the bill, and take this bill up again tomorrow if possible. If not, then perhaps on Thursday. Next, we do have time to have to begin on House Bill 29. House Bill 429, I'm sorry, and sponsored Bert Sharp. Hello, Bert. Welcome home. Former member of our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to have this bill heard today. I believe that there are people, I'd rather give a sponsor statement at this time. If there are people on teleconference that want to speak to this, since you're going into confirmation hearings in 5 or 10 minutes, possibly, if you allow, Mr. Chairman, you might, I'd give way for testimony from those areas if that's permissible.
I'm sorry, Gordon.
I'm just saying that. If there's people on teleconference from Fairbanks, and I'd rather give away rather than to them give an opportunity.
Well, we can come back to the bill after confirmation hearings if you like.
Yeah, no,
we
I'll come back to the sponsor statement after that.
Oh, okay. So you would prefer to take some public testimony at this point?
Yeah, I would, and then they could go on their way.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll do that then. Public testimony for House Bill 429, Fairbanks. Hello, Fairbanks. Lynn Levengood, are you there?
Yes, Chairman, I am.
If you would please limit your comments to 3 minutes, and then we'll go on down through the network here until about 5 minutes after four. Or 10 minutes after four, and if you would state your name for the record, and if you represent someone or an organization, please so indicate. Go ahead, please, Mr. Levengood.
Thank you. My name is Lynn Levengood. I'm from Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm an attorney. I'm here representing myself and the Fairbanks Hunting Club. I'd like to address my comments to the committee substitute to HB 429, and hopefully, Bert, you have the committee substitute in front of the committee. Well, 429 dated 3/19/92.
Yeah. Just a blank substitute.
Is that blank substitute? Mr. Levengood, wait just a minute. We have a logistical problem here. If you would hold up, please. You have.
Oh, there we go.
39. Yes, it's on the back of from the back of this long sheet here. Please go ahead, Mr. Levengood. We're settling in here. If you would, please continue.
Thank you. The only minor language correction I would make is found in paragraph 11, the second phrase, which I would delete, which states within the department's ability. That's not defined, and I believe is unnecessary. The only other language correction is in paragraph 12, section F, at the very last sentence of the bill, which in right after the quotations, intensive management, unquote, you'll have the phrase, does not include. And I think you need some explanatory language like is not limited to or is in addition to, rather than the three words does not include. My comments as the originator and the author of this bill, I'd like to testify to the great number of drafts and rewrites it's gone through. I'd like to thank the co-sponsors, Representative Sharp and his office staff, Representative Department of Fish and Game for their assistance in the drafting, and from members of the administration for their encouragement and support. If it passed, this bill took approach in a new direction in wildlife management, similar to some Scandinavian countries. And as you may be aware, in Sweden alone, their moose population surplus exceeds Alaska's by tenfold each year. Simply stated, this legislation would provide the legislative basis for the Board of Game to instruct the department to increase wildlife populations. It's nonpartisan, nonpolitical, has no budget impact, and is something every legislator should be proud to support in this election year. I know of no knowledgeable opposition to this concept, but there may be some misinterpretations, and I'd like to briefly mention a few. One that I've heard is that this bill, if passed, would mandate predator control, and that's absolutely false. The bill is neutral as to any individual method or means, and allows the professional wildlife managers to choose the techniques which would provide for enhancement of our resource. One example is the Bison Project in Delta, where they planted additional feed and did some control habitat enhancement. Another misconception is that it may upset the balance of nature, and that seems to be a non-issue, because due to man's impact on our environment, it's certainly our duty to assist nature, and this bill would provide that assistance by statutorily providing the authority to the Board of Game to direct the Department of Fish and Game to take measures to increase wildlife populations. The opposition may ask for additional studies, but we've studied this situation for 10 years, spent a lot of money, and haven't produced any additional animals. The current philosophy is a negative one, which provides for restricting harvest and restricting humans and their activity. This new philosophy would provide enhancement to the resource, provide increased populations, which will allow for increased opportunities for all user groups, increased opportunities for subsistence, for viewing, and all other uses of wildlife. I'd appreciate your support and invite your questions if they exist concerning the intent of this legislation.
Thank you very much. We have a number of other people that are online to testify. Perhaps we can come back if time permits. Mr. Sean McGuire.
Hi, my name is Sean McGuire. I have a sense, and I don't know, Lynn said it wasn't, but I'm a little bit concerned that this bill is in part, it is wolf control. The whole idea of having as much game as possible is basically saying the only way to do that is to control wolves. And when it comes right down to it, the only way to control wolves is through aerial hunting. And since aerial hunters, well, the only effective way, and since aerial hunters are about as popular as the monster from the Black Lagoon, and they have been losing more and more ground with every passing year, they are smart enough to realize that they have a PR problem that won't quit. It reminds me of calling nuclear weapons peacekeepers. They are in part simply trying to put a nice face on aerial wolf hunting. I just have three quick points. To give you an indication of how hot this issue is, this aerial wolf hunting issue, Governor Cooper got more mail about aerial wolf hunting by far than any other issue. 99% of it was against aerial hunting. I believe that both in the states and in the nation, the sentiment is growing against aerial wolf hunting, and I think it is safe to say that there is a tidal wave of people out there who are against aerial hunting. And finally, I can say from experience, there is nothing that makes people more upset than the idea that in 1992, people are still using airplanes to track down and kill wildlife. Please don't support a bill that promotes and mandates aerial wolf hunting. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll next go to David Vandenberg.
Thank you. My name is David Vandenberg. I represent the Northern Alaska Environmental Center. We have over 1,100 members. And just to preface all of my comments, I'd like to say that the Northern Center is not anti-use or anti-hunter, but we are anti-HB 429, the act relating to the powers of the Board of Game. Living in Alaska, we have to accept certain limitations. And one limitation, the one we've assembled to discuss, is that Alaska's ecosystems are not highly productive. Unfortunately, once again, human needs and desires are bucking the edges of our limitations. HB 429 and its sponsors purport to increase Alaska's ecosystem's productivity for selected game species. But let's not fool ourselves. The state-of-the-art in intensive management and game population enhancement, the very bread and butter of intensive management, is wolf control. I personally and the Northern Center for over the last 10 years have worked with the Department of Game, with the Department of Fish and Game and the Board of Game, and most recently with the Strategic Wolf Management Plan, in all areas that we've identified as possible candidates for intensive management where there might be game populations under stress, the only solution that there seems to be is wolf control. There is talk of habitat manipulation and habitat enhancement, but by and large, it's wolf control. HB 429 will not solve any long-term problems. It's unclear to me what the real problems are. I don't think the problem is that wildlife populations can't regulate themselves. And I don't think the problem is that predators eat too much. The problem is that Alaska is growing and growing fast, and no one anywhere is doing really anything to address that problem. This bill should be commended for its attempt to solve problems, but this bill only ups the supply for immediate consumption. And where will this all end? That's the question that we are asking, because HB 429 sets a precedent that as population increases and hunting demand increases, that will require a corresponding increase in game populations and a downward trend on predators. By requiring the Board of Game to identify areas to be intensively managed, this legislation has the potential to tie the board's hands, torpedo 2 years of work on this by the public and the department and the board on the Strategic Wolf Management Plan, and probably get the state into lots of legal trouble. I would be happy to expand on that at a later time. And a final concern is that it has the potential to remove the allocation of wildlife resources between the consumptive and non-consumptive use from the public process. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony, and I appreciate it being brief. We do have a number of other people that, unless we really hustle here, we're not going to get to all of them. Catherine Richardson?
My name is Catherine Richardson. I'm representing myself, and I'm strongly opposed to House Bill 429. Historically, the legislature has not intervened in wildlife management. In January 1990, Jim Grinder wrote in his column in the Newsminer, and I quote, "Alaska is unique among its sister states in that its residents enjoy what outsiders consider to be the most democratic disruptive process of game and fish law formulation to be found anywhere." He concluded, "It's one of a kind among the 50 states." I'm opposed to this bill because I think it would destroy this process by bypassing it and mandating the intensive management of our game for human harvest, that is, for the benefit of certain interest groups. I'm also opposed to this bill because the intensive management does require wolf control. now, and if predator control is required by law, the public would no longer have any voice on wolf or bear control. Thank you for this opportunity to comment.
Ken Borisek? Ken Borisek, please.
Thank you. I urge you to support this important bill so that Fish and Game may once again take an active management role in improving our wildlife resource. From this, we will gain both economic and social benefits. All too often, our game management officials take a comfortable attitude that nature will balance itself. The question is without man's help, can nature balance itself against the immense weight of human impact? In other words, can nature alone balance wildlife against the development of cities, highways, farmlands, the pollution from automobiles, factories, and chemicals, the loss of habitat, shelter, and food? The answer is no, it cannot. Not if civilization is to remain as we know it today. Man has been provided with the power of reason so that he might manage and balance his resource to consistently provide for his needs, thus sparing him from the harsh and brutal realities of nature. To those who suggest we should not manage or control our wildlife in favor of nature balancing itself, I must ask, when did humanity grow so perverted that it, in the name of balancing nature, allows for starvation, disease, and devastation of entire animal species? How did a school of thought become so barbaric that in the name of animal rights, it accepts and encourages a pack of animals to capture another living creature and slowly tear its flesh apart and consume it while still alive? Say promoters lie down in front of a lion and allow themselves to be torn apart or sacrifice their children by means of widespread starvation or disease for the sake of balancing nature? No, I don't think so. They will continue to manage and manipulate nature to minimize its adverse effects on humans, yet they would have you believe that other animals can overcome these harsh realities and live happily ever after without man's interference. We as a nation fight to protect our homeland, we cultivate our crops, we control our pests, we provide our livestock with shelter and safeguard them from disease. We understand very well the extreme importance of managing, controlling, and protecting that which is essential to our existence. Yet some would propose that it is beneficial for our wildlife to go unmanaged, unprotected, and uncontrolled. If we allowed a fox to live in our chicken coops, we would soon have no eggs or meat. Our wildlife is just as susceptible to overpredation and just as essential to the needs of humanity as our barnyard fowl. We cannot stop the death of an animal. We can only hope to manage our wildlife in a manner that allows for the maximum number of animals to live and to wisely utilize those animals in a manner that continues to support life as a whole. If we continue to encourage a no-management wildlife policy, then wildlife is doomed to a fate far worse than a hunter's bullet. Let's apply more common sense and less nonsense to wildlife management. And for those that have a philosophical opposition to killing, while admirable, they do not understand the first law of nature, that is, for one life to live, another must die. Killing is unethical, then nature is unethical. It seems foolish for humans to spend billions of dollars on habitat improvement and wildlife propagation only to feed the results of these efforts to predators. Predators that have been allowed to increase out of all proportion to prey, yet the same management policies do not provide for adequate human harvest. The challenge that faces you as legislators is to understand that in a world with 4 billion people and still growing, wildlife can only survive through active management. Please, for the sake of our greatest national resource, support Bill 429. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to go next to... You're not on the teleconference, please. We'll have to go to other places now. We'll come back to Fairbanks. I'd like to go to Kodiak. Nancy Hillstrand, please.
Yes, hello. My name is Nancy Hillstrand, and I'm representing myself. And I'm speaking to oppose HB 429. This bill can have costly consequences not foreseen at this time. The Board of Games already has the authority to provide for the management of games. The process is presently in place, which allows for healthy interactions of the public as long as the board is made up of a broad-minded group of individuals who looks out for all aspects of our society. The votes of the last Board of Games do not reflect this. In Alaska, we presently have healthy predator-prey relationships. It is not broken. Manipulation of species populations by single-species management, as 429 promotes, has shown to historically upset the delicate balance. HB 429 reflects political pressure once again entering into our biological wildlife management. Our fish stocks in Lower Cook Inlet are a prime example of political management. It does not work. In intensely managed areas, it is broken. Tremendous imbalance. House Bill 429 promotes a style of wildlife management which we should transcend. It is obsolete. It does not take into account future human population growth. It could promote the hotly controversial predator control. And it attacks the public process by putting a mandate on the Board of Game that they shall make decisions. Micromanagement, as this bill promotes, has been vividly shown to create costly consequences. The Earth does not work smoothly on man-altered biological balances. Healthy ecosystem management, the broader view of wildlife interaction and interrelationship, on the other hand, will provide sustained yield for generations to come.
Well, Nancy, you've gone offline. Are you with us?
It's followed by Pittman-Robertson, Dingell-Johnson funding. Their hands are politically tied. The legislature must at least provide protection to wildlife populations by opposing bills such as this one and scrutinizing the appointees of the game board to assure the broader perspective is not overlooked. Thank you very kindly.
Thank you. We are going now to take up a different bill. We will come back to this for public testimony, but we must get the confirmation hearings going because of the schedule. What I would like to clarify for the committee is we are only working off of the committee substitute for the bill before us. And I think I have understood the confusion here. It is only a work draft. It is only a work draft. And about 20 minutes ago, we did, in fact, get from Fish and Game a position paper along with a fiscal note that indicates committee substitute House Bill, well, committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 29 resources. The resources should be blank. This has not been adopted committee substitute before our committee. I would request that in future Fish and Game at least give us time to get the bill before us before you attest to the fact that that is the bill in fact before us. So with that clarification, I would now like to go into confirmation hearings of the Board of Fish and ask Trifon Anguson, please, to come forward. Thank you, Trifon, and welcome to the House Resources Committee. The way we usually do this is we'll take a statement from you, and then we'll go out on teleconference, and, well, before we do that, we'll have questions by members of the committee, and then we'll go out on teleconference for public testimony. So, Trifon, if you would please identify yourself for the record.
Can I turn this on here?
Yes, please.
Yeah, thank you, sir. My name is Trifon Anguson. I'm a commercial fisherman from Bristol Bay. I'm employed by the Bristol Bay Native Corporation during the wintertime, but I hold a commercial limited interest permit for the Bristol Bay fishery and have had fish all of my life in Bristol Bay. One of the reasons why I wanted, you know, why I'm before the nomination process with the Board of Fish was that I felt that the Board of Fish process, the process that's involved with fisheries regulations, one of the few ways that local participation or citizen participation can actually affect the regulations was through the Board process, and that's one of the reasons why I felt it was important that I begin seek the nomination to the Board of Fish. With that, I'll end the session.
Thank you, Chief Hunter. Are there questions for Ms. Jangerson from members of the committee? Well, it's certainly,
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hudson.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Strangerson has been recently in the legislature some concern about whether or not board members receive enough remuneration because of the exceptional amount of time that's involved in this business. How do you feel about that, sir? Are you aware of the remunerations and the per diems and the amount of time that's necessary to give?
Well, I mean, it's a citizen board, and we recognize that. And I'm recognizing that. Well, I don't know how the other board members will feel about this. Am I saying this? But I realize that there, what I think the per diem that the Board of Fish receives isn't going to cover it. But that's not the issue. I think. I think if we are in it for the money or glory, we certainly wouldn't be seeking the position. I guess that's all I can respond to that.
Thank you.
Well, I guess I would hope that we could at least cover your expenses, Trayvon. That's the intent of another piece of legislation. Representative Lincoln.
Thank you. Trayvon, in the question that we had in the false pass issue and the testimony that I had given to the Board of Fisheries, my concern is that in the Board of Fisheries, that oftentimes, Board of Fisheries and Board of Game, that oftentimes the information that is given to you, or that you rely upon the information that's given to you, that how do you propose to get adequate, reliable information from the Fish and Game Department for you to make your decision?
Well, I don't think that, the way the system has gone, I think that there may have been, some small technical errors in the process of information, but I feel that the way the department has provided information to the Board of Fish, given that, the system works with the department providing the information and then the Board of Fish solicits input by the public. And that, if there's a travesty of justice, it'll come out, and with public testimony. I think that that's one of the keys to the success of the Board of Fish process is that you're able to, if you're uncomfortable with the information that you receive from the from the department, public testimony can resolve that to some degree. Does that answer your question, Mr. Taylor?
Please go ahead.
As you're well aware, that oftentimes people in the bush are not able to access that ability to make their presentation or their position known. And how would you hear, other than through correspondence, which is a very difficult skill at this time for especially our native people to communicate via letters, to how else would you propose to get that information when you have very limited meetings out in the smaller areas of Alaska?
Well, I think advisory committees that are out there, the state is blanketed with local advisory committees. They are the probably one avenue that we really haven't sought out for participation in gathering information. I think also that, for example, in subsistence, the department has an excellent division of subsistence that really could be utilized, in the manner that you're addressing. I agree that up to there is a problem in identifying when there are, when a resource is in jeopardy or when there's a subsistence shortage. That's one of the questions that I have is who is available to provide us with that information, and that's why I'm confident that the public process works, because if we if we come up against an area that that there's a subsistence problem or a conservation problem, but the public certainly gives information or come to the hearings and letters, and that seems to be working rather well. But advisory committees, and I think the board is now going out. This is only my, I've only attended three meetings, but they've been meetings in Bethel, meetings in Juneau, and one in Anchorage, and so they're covering different areas. And so I guess I hear you say that you you want to know how to improve the communication process between the public and the board. Is that what you're asking?
That's one of the questions. Is if what my initial question was is how do you get that information that you feel is adequate and reliable, and your response was that if it isn't, then the public would let the Board of Fisheries know. And then my question is then some of our areas that don't have the money, the means in which to make that presentation to the board. But I appreciate your answer. If I could just ask one other further question.
Please go ahead.
I would like to hear what your position is as a board member in adopting a mixed stock fishery policy.
Well, I think if you look at the public record, I was the one that made the motion at the last board meeting to have the board conduct a workshop in developing a mixed stock policy. I believe that a policy is pretty important. I recognize that the fisheries in the state of Alaska, the fishermen in the state of Alaska, we can't expect to wake up one morning and find their fishery gone. I mean, regardless of being wherever type of fisherman that participating in the fishery, I think that with a mixed stock policy position that we could work off of, it would stabilize a lot of the concerns that the local fishermen have about the state of their fishery. We spend so much time at Board of Fish meetings, and I think it's a lot of energy that's misdirected. So, if we're spending a lot of energy trying to shut down a fishery or trying to, and if you have a lot of angry people in the state of Alaska, then I think it's time for us to take a look at how fisheries are being managed. And if there is a lot of concern from the public about the lack of a fishery mixed stock policy plan, then I think then we should develop one.
Trifon, you indicated that you've been to three meetings, including preparation time and travel time and actual meeting time. How many hours do you feel that you have to take for this position to represent the state of Alaska?
Well, I'll use one. I'll use the Southeast Troll issue because it's one that I could relate to. And that's the one that we attended last. Mm-hmm. And from about the time that I got on the board, or was appointed to the board in February 1, I began receiving stacks and stacks and stacks of letters from the user groups in Southeast Alaska. I just don't know how many letters there are. But having to read them, and people are reaching out trying to communicate with I felt that it would have been a lack of, I didn't really want to, I wanted to be sure that I was able to understand where they were coming from. So I took the time to read them, and it took a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's because it was my first meeting or my third meeting, but maybe, as you go through the process, you kind of discount a lot of the, that information that comes in. But for the Southeast issue, it took a lot more than just coming to Southeast and trying to familiarize myself with the with the issue and with the toll issue. But it took several weeks, a month. I don't know. It was just an ongoing process.
Consumes a lot of your time.
Right.
That leads me to another question, Trifon. Do you think that we should be looking at a system of not allowing people to vote on the board until they are confirmed? What I'm concerned about is people having to vote on something before they've actually been confirmed, raising the specter of whether or not that should be considered a legal vote if they're not confirmed. Or secondly, if it's unfair to expect you to pass through confirmation after you've had to take an unpopular
make an unpopular vote or something like that.
I think we're seeing that. I mean, the second part of your question is, it crossed my mind to sit back and kind of take a neutral position on some issues, but I felt that the issues were there, and I really didn't want to watching some of the things that came down before me on some of the more controversial issues, for example, the Chum Cap, where we saw a lot of people in Western Alaska go and try to do a lot of, that was an issue that came to my mind about having to, but I believe that if what we're doing is the right thing, and if the public doesn't like it, then we shouldn't be there anyway. And that's what everyone would believe.
Thank you. Additional questions or comments by members of the committee? Next, I'd like to go out there. Is there anyone in Anchorage who would like to offer public testimony on the confirmation of Trayvon Angus for the Board of Fish?
No, there's no one signed up for that.
In Fairbanks?
No one signed up in
their
surveys for them.
Anyone in Kodiak? Is there anyone on the teleconference network who wishes to testify on the Board of Fish confirmation hearing on Trayvon Angus at this time? Well,
his senior picture is scared
him away. Trayvon, thank you very much. Next, I'd like to go on to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. And first up, we have Mr. Robert Henman. Robert, I believe. Where is Robert Henman?
I'm here, sir.
Good. Where are you, Robert?
At the moment, I am in Wenatchee, Washington.
Oh, that's right.
Good.
Okay, I have another list for you. Okay, Robert, if you would please give your statement, and then we'll ask some questions, perhaps, and then we'll go from there. So, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Bob Tinman. I reside at 9019 Turner Street in Juneau. I'm a 34-year resident of Alaska and retired from the Department of Fish and Game after 22 years with the Division of Game in the last 12 as the Deputy Director. A little background, I'm a graduate of the University of Alaska Fairbanks and have a master's degree from Utah State as well in wildlife management. Since my retirement in 1987, I have operated a charter fishing business in the Juneau area during the summer and done some consulting and writing. And I've also served on the task force for guiding game that researched the problems facing the guiding industry following the Osage Egg case. And during the years of employment with this fund, I lived in Anchorage, Homer, Fairbanks, and Juneau, and was fortunate enough to work in almost all parts of the state. During these years, I had considerable interaction with guides because managing guides and non-resident hunting pressure is an integral part of game management. I also dealt intensively with regulations with the Division of Game, which also caused a fair amount of interaction with guides and their clients. I strongly believe that a healthy guiding industry is good for the state economically, and properly run can be good for the Alaska visitor as well. I believe that a good guiding system can be a positive tool in achieving the proper use and management of a game, and I'm very encouraged to see that the legislature has mandated a resource-based guiding system and see what I can contribute to the solution of many of the problems that remain in fully implementing such a system. I look forward to serving on the Big Game's Commercial Services Board. Thank you.
Any questions for the nominee for the Big Game Commercial Services Board, Bob Hinman, by members of the committee? Representative Hudson.
Mr. Chairman, not a question, but just a strong vote of approval. I've known Bob for a long period of time, and he's my opinion, very honest and very sincere, dedicated person with an awful lot of excellent qualifications. I think that we're lucky to get people like this to step forward.
No one has signed in for public testimony on Mr. Hinman here in Juneau. Is there anyone in the audience who... Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Bishop, yes, you would you please come forward? And also, if you would, please give us your... I understand you're going to be giving comments for all the nominees, is that correct?
That's correct.
Did you want to do that all at the same time, or...
Well,
I didn't give you an opportunity. I apologize for the last... if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dick Bishop. I'm speaking on behalf of the last of our council. The state, Mr. Chairman, this is Dick Bishop. I'm speaking on behalf of the Alaska Outdoor Council, a statewide coalition of outdoor users and conservation groups. And I'd like to speak in favor of the nomination of several people today, starting with Mr. Anguson, who you heard earlier. The Outdoor Council does support his confirmation as a member of the Fisheries Board. Our experience has largely been through my acquaintance with him, and to make it brief, I think Mr. Anguson is a fair-minded and honest man with a wealth of experience in the field of fisheries that will be an asset to the Board of Fisheries, and we strongly support him. We also would like to support Mr. Hinman for the Big Game Commercial Services Board, and again, I think Mr. Hinman is an honest and fair-minded and objective person who also brings a wealth of experience in resource management and the business of guiding and related matters, and is and will be a real asset to that board. And finally, if I may jump ahead maybe a little bit, and we have considered nominees to the Board of Game, and we would like to support as well Albert Fransman, Donald Hanks, and Kenneth Johns. All of these people we feel have diverse backgrounds but have attributes that will contribute to a well-balanced and effective Board of Game. So without further comment, we add our support to those people. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Is there anyone in Fairbanks who wishes to speak on behalf of Mr. Hinman at this point?
There's no one here in Fairbanks to speak on that. Thank you.
In Anchorage, please.
No one in Anchorage.
In Kodiak? Is there anyone else on the teleconference network who wishes to speak on the confirmation hearing of Mr. Robert Hinman of the Big Game Commercial Services Board? If not, I would like to go on then to Mr. Eric Stirrup from Kodiak, who is also a nominee for the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Hello, Eric, are you there?
Chairman, thank you for this opportunity to testify before you and the members of the House Resources Committee. My name is Eric Stirrup. I'm a year-round resident of Kodiak Island and 8 years now as a full-time charter vessel operator and owner here on Kodiak. I also am a state-licensed transporter in the big game commercial services industry. Briefly, I'd like to say I strongly support the big game commercial services industry. It is a very viable and important aspect of the visitor industry here in the state of Alaska. I also strongly support the other services, licensed service providers to the industry, the transporter issues, and the commercial use permittees. Also, be happy to answer any questions to you or any of your other committee members.
Any questions for Mr. Stirrup for the Big Game Commercial Services Board? Well, Erica, I'm sorry, Vice Chairman Lincoln?
Mr. Stirrup, I meant to ask this question also of the other member that was testifying or was up for confirmation, but I understand that there is a considerable amount of time that the Board of Game takes in their hearings and throughout the state of Alaska. Are you obviously, you must have given this some thought and you're prepared to take that kind of time, but I'd like to hear from you your thoughts when you were asked to serve on the Board of Games, on the time allocation that this would be to you and your family.
Representative Lincoln, as far as the time allocation goes, I am 100% committed to my business and the industry itself. I don't feel that time allocation takes away from that. I think it's part of what I do. What concerns me from the statement of compensation for time, I'm not so concerned about being compensated for my time as long as the compensation meets one's expenses when they are traveling. With the increasing costs of travel, et cetera, quite frankly, to be placed purely on a per diem basis can leave one in the lurch. I don't feel that it's right to serve for the state and have to put oneself in substandard hotels and eat substandard meals. A person serving the state, or for that matter, any body, needs to be at their best. And I hope I am clear on that. I would not like to see budget restraints so tight that basically we're fitting our own bill to do the work that needs to be done.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bob Hinman. I'm still on line. I'd like to answer Representative Lincoln's question, if you wish.
Okay, Eric, if you would hold, please. Go ahead, Mr. Hinman. Mr. Hinman. Mr. Stirp, do you have any additional comments at this point?
Representative Davidson, no, I don't. But again, I'm here to answer any questions and at your disposal.
Any other questions by members of the committee? Thank you, Eric. We'll go out on the teleconference network now and see if there are other comments regarding your nomination. Is there anyone in Anchorage or Fairbanks who wishes to testify on the nomination of Mr. Eric Stirp for the Big Game Commercial Services Board?
Yeah, this is Fairbanks, so we do have one person here.
Yes, if that person would please give their name.
Yes, can you hear me?
We certainly can. Please go ahead.
My name is Lynette Clark. I'm a 17-year resident in the interior. First came into the country in 51. I'd like to address the per diem comment. And the quality. I understand in order to do your best, you gotta rise up from a good bed that you had a good night's sleep in and that you gotta put some grub in your stomach. But this, the idea of going first class is dying with the federal Congress right now on the perk system. I suggest that if this gentleman is worried about first class bucks as opposed to being able to get the job done, he should reconsider. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in Anchorage? Anyone else throughout the teleconference network who would like to comment at this time on the nomination of Mr. Stirrup for the Big Game Commercial Services Board? Anywhere on the teleconference network? Not then. Thank you very much, Eric and Bob, we appreciate your willingness to come forward and do the job for the public in Alaska and as well as for the resource. Thank you again. With that, I'd like to move on to the Board of Game confirmation hearings. And Mr. Robert Fransman, are you on the teleconference, Albert Fransman? Soldatna? Nobody there. Okay, we'll go on to Donald Hanks in Eagle River. Mr. Hanks, are you there in Anchorage?
Yes. Correct, Mr. Hanks.
Yeah, Mr. Hanks, would you please continue with your statement regarding your nomination for the Board of Game?
Yes, Don Hanks. I've resided in Alaska since 1964. I reside at this present time in Eagle River, Alaska. I don't have a big prepared speech here for you or anything. I kind of have to snicker at the statements made earlier by someone I've listened to asking if they found it questionable of confirming us after we've already done the work. So I think I'll just leave my statements be that you've got about 3 weeks worth of tapes there that can be reviewed of the job I've already basically done, and go to answer any other questions for you. I will also state that I know I was a little bit of a controversial person during the process of choosing board members. On the original picking of myself in Juneau, I know that there was a few people in the department that did not fully endorse me. Some of those people, I feel that after seeing us work in the board meetings there in April and in March, probably at this time, if they were re-questioned, would change their opinion and probably reverse their action and endorse me. But I'll leave it at that and answer any questions you have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hanks. Are there questions by members of the committee of Mr. Hanks? Vice Chairman Lincoln.
Chairman, thank you. I have several questions. I guess I'll start out with some of the remarks, Mr. Hanks, that you made during the Board of Game meeting in April of 92, and I just would like to hear some clarification. One, I'd like to hear from you if you have an understanding or what is your opinion on subsistence as the first question.
Well, I think you should please state that question a little more, how you'd wish it directed. I can answer that 20 ways, so throw me a more specific question on that, please.
What is your stand on the subsistence regulations as they stand presently, or the discussion that is occurring right now on the subsistence issue? If you could give me your views on what is occurring with the subsistence issue.
Well, I don't necessarily know how to answer that question for you. That's the biggest controversial issue in the state for the last several years, and I think will continue to be. I've tried to, during the weeks that I was on the board there, I feel I was very open-minded on listening to all sides of those views of subsistence, and I look at basically subsistence as a sustained yield of a harvest, and with the best resource in line for the animals, taking consideration first. I feel that most all the board members on there at the board at this time, our first outlook is to protect resources and figure the best utilization of the resources, and then dividing resources up amongst the people that's what the board's all about. That's what the debates are about, and
Well, Mr. Hanks, perhaps I could be a little bit more specific in that if, when you are talking about animals first, if it came down to the subsistence user versus the sports hunter, how would you go on that issue?
Well, I'm not going to let you put me in a position of saying I favor one user group over the other. I really feel that that I favor the Alaska resident. I've been up here since 1964. One thing when I was on the advisory board there, I mean, one thing was on the game board meetings, I noticed the advisory committee's recommendations coming into us every day on paper. I also received a lot of phone calls from advisory members. I have friends scattered throughout this state that I have spent many nights and many days in people's cabins, in the bush, in the rural, is what I'm saying, both white and native, and each item and each game management unit and each area has its own unique problems. Especially, I might have answered this different 2 months ago, but after going through 3 months, 3 or 4 weeks on this game board, I think that's the best way to answer it, is that each area and each group of people and each game management unit has to really be looked at individually and then try to split up the resources as fairly as possible. I really would like to think that in some instances there's enough room for everybody, although we did see a few examples and in the past there's been examples like on the Neltina caribou herd that there's a bigger demand for the resource than available. At that time, again, that's what the board has to sit down and work out, is a fair equal way to share the resources amongst possibly and hopefully every resident. I believe the word subsistence is overemphasized sometimes. I feel that all users are subsistence users, and I definitely don't favor a sport hunter over a subsistence user, and I definitely don't favor a subsistence user over a sport hunter. Like I say, hopefully the board can continue to work out, as I know they tried to this last session, fair and equal ways for everyone.
Mr. Hanks, I'm going to read you a part of your statement back in April of 92 and would like a little bit more information on what you were thinking here. This says, I'm telling you these proposal books are full of this type of garbage, and the only way we're going to change the system around and quit separating our people is to tell these people to go to hell that are writing this stuff. What I'm suggesting is we have to vote on this stuff is take no action. So half of these damn proposals. If we don't, we're setting a trend of taking away all our rights for the rural people as well as the urban people. Please think about what I'm suggesting to you here. This is not equal treatment. Could you please expound on that a little bit?
Yes, you might help me a little. Tell me what proposal number that was and what proposal issue that was. It's coming back to me real quick here. I think we got a good answer for you, but throw me which exact one that was, because I basically said that same type of statements during a couple times those 3 weeks.
I see. Well, I'm not sure I can locate exactly which proposals. There's 159, 158. It doesn't count. 149, 159, 158. I'm not sure which ones you were really speaking to. It's a rather lengthy statement. You have a 3-page statement here.
Okay. That particular issue, yes, I felt very determined in against a couple of those proposals. There was many times there during those meetings. Most of the time, the votes of the board members would come out on a my memory, a couple of those proposals you mentioned were the only ones that I voted against when the rest of the board went ahead and accepted them. I also feel that they were, there's much more involved there. If you listen to the whole area of that, of those proposals from the beginning, from the department's recommendations and all other members' testimony and debate on those proposals, I think you'll realize that it was the proposal that I was against had nothing to do with the rights of subsistence users. I was against that particular proposals because I felt, and I also remember giving testimony in there, that those that proposal in the long term would also work against the rural people. I do not believe in selective enforcement. I believe that proposals, a couple of those proposals, the way they're laid out, will turn into selective enforcement down the road in 3 to 5 years and will work against the rural people. It was a basis they were given one thing, but in the end they're going to be taken away another right. On that particular issue, it's real simple. They're going to be given the right to harvest brown bears without a fee on a tag. However, if you'll study that proposal through its fullest meaning, at the end they cannot remove the hide of that animal. They can harvest the hide as well as the meat, but they cannot remove it from the game management unit they are in. Therefore, if you'll think about that, what it boils down to, they have to surrender the hide to the department to cut the claws and the head off of it, and totally have nothing left of any emotional or personal value to themselves. Now, if you'll put yourself in a position out there, I don't believe that a person is going to have knowledge that he has to give up and lose the right of keeping his hide if he wishes to move from one area of the state to another. I don't believe that's going to be spelled out in the game regulations in fully, or when someone hands him a free harvest ticket. There's many reasons, and this is just, I won't go on to this. They don't need to go any further. I'm trying to make the point to you. I felt it is a bad proposal, a bad regulation. I also know that that particular proposal was being a little endorsed a little bit to pass due to legal problems. I don't see correcting one legal problem by making another. Unfortunately, that's the type of reasons I made some of the statements I did. I mean, fortunately, that's the type of reasons I made some of the statements I did that maybe I couldn't get across as well as I wished to everyone, because I feel that down the road you can pacify one problem and create another one, and that's